So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Happy Veterans Day and God bless the USA and all of those men and women who have served our country. Joining me in a little bit will be Father Tim Grumbach, who actually comes from a military family, having multiple members who are in the service. And it will be great to hear his perspective as a Catholic priest on service and coming from a family who has served this great nation at a time when we need to remember to be patriotic, even in the face of everything that we are surrounded by with the current election. Speaking of the election, one of the key topics that you and I have been very concerned about has had to do with regard to abortion. Now, I find that with regard to abortion, there's been this sense of apathy. Not that we aren't pro-life, but that many who hold to that firm pro-life position have lost their zeal for speaking up against this atrocity happening in our great nation. We've grown accustomed to it. I'll talk about that in just a little bit and why Kanye West's words on abortion are quite refreshing because he's someone who's not sugarcoating it. Coming up, I'll also talk about how important it is to have fathers within the home. A father truly transforms the future of his children when he is present during their most pivotal years. He's quite a gift to a child, and it's important for dads to be there. I'll share with you some of the studies and research as to why that is and how beneficial it really is for that dad to be present in the face of a culture that tends to think men can be dangerous. They're just absent, clueless, unnecessary. We'll talk about why they are necessary. Why? They're non-negotiable for a child and their well-being moving forward. So stay tuned. We'll be discussing that and much more here on the show, including how teens have fared quite well during COVID and what that tells us about relationships and rest. I want to come back to this Kanye West discussion. So Kanye has been doing a number of interviews, you name it. He has been bringing up abortion here, there, and everywhere. One of the latest, a couple weeks ago, was an interview he did with the podcaster Joe Rogan. And guess what? Kanye threw it down yet again, not with any rapping, but with his conversation about abortion. Listen to this.
Let me talk about Planned Parenthood.
Okay.
There's the last figure I saw is there were 210,000 deaths due to COVID in America. And everywhere you go, you see someone with a mask on. With culture. I'll say it one time. With abortion culture, there are 1,000 black children aborted a day, daily. We are in genocide. So more black children have died in the past since February than people have died of COVID, and everyone wears a mask. So it's a matter of where are we turning a blind eye to? Like, the media can control a lot of times, or has control, what we care about.
Mm-hmm. And the media does control what we care about. You don't want to hear about abortion? You are pro-abortion? Guess what? Your social media is only going to feed you pro-abortion types of topics. You're pro-life? Well, you'll get to see the pro-life content of your friends and family who post that content online. There's been this clear filtration that actually brings up a total side tangent. I would love to hear your thoughts. I'm posting on social media, my Instagram and my Twitter. What do you think about Parler, this massive exit from social media? Have you gone to Parler? Have you already left and maybe you have said good riddance to Instagram, Twitter, Facebook? What do you do? I would love to hear why you may have left, maybe leaving, and what you think about the change. So head over to my Instagram or Twitter where you can comment on that. Now, Kanye West has brought up a number of important things. First and foremost, if you did not know, a third of the abortions performed in the United States are on black babies. This is targeted racism and outright eugenics. In Kanye's willing to call that out. No apologies. Now, people allow him to call it out because he has a public platform. He is waking many people up from this drowsy sleep where they knew something was eating them alive within the Black community, within our culture as a whole with regard to abortion. And he really is a refreshing take on the abortion issue, because I have a real problem with regard to how apathetic we really have become. We're pro-life, but what are we doing? What are we doing to change this culture? I was with a dear friend over the weekend who I've had the opportunity to serve with in capacities of crisis pregnancy centers, truly being first responders to women in crisis who are considering having an abortion. And she shares over and over again how difficult it is to reach women who fall right into the hands of Planned Parenthood. It is so difficult to reach out to these women because Planned Parenthood is in their school. Planned Parenthood is in their pocket, from social media to text messaging campaigns. Planned Parenthood is in the face of young people today. Everywhere they are, Planned Parenthood is. And so what are you and I going to do to be present, to be the first responders to those young men and women who are contemplating an abortion, who are thinking about needing a condom for this weekend's hookup? These are the true realities that Planned Parenthood is willing to be the best friend of a young person today in order to be there. I've got you, your back. Pick up your free condoms on this day for your weekend trips. They're getting, young people receive text messages about this. Do you know that? I'm not kidding when I say they're in the face of young people today. And so as Kanye is talking about abortion, I say thank you, because you are speaking up when many people have become apathetic. Or maybe you say, hey, I post on social media. Do not stop doing that. Your social media exposure, your ongoing education of friends and family with regard to the abortion issue is so important. However, we have to build relationships as well. And so my challenge to you is, what are you doing? How are you using your time, talent, and treasure with regard to the life issue? Kanye West gave a really good example in his interview that I just played a second ago with Joe Rogan. And he said, look, 1,000 Black babies are dying every single day. And just since February, since the United States has been hit with COVID, far more Black babies have died because of abortion than anyone has died because of COVID. I'm not trying to downplay the COVID numbers. What I am saying is, look, we've taken all these preventative measures with masks, social distancing, and so forth to slow the spread, to decrease the number of people dying from COVID. What are you and I doing about the genocide of the Black community in the United States? Are we willing to go and stand in front of Planned Parenthood for an hour, one day a week, to be a first responder? And maybe you aren't prepared to sidewalk counsel, but you can stand there and be a witness for those men and women who walk in and out. Breaks my heart that I have to go to my Planned Parenthood closest to me, a few minutes away, and no one's ever there, not even on a Saturday morning. And so I have, for safety reasons, because no one's out there with me, I have to prudentially pray my rosary and walk around quietly. I know God is there and He is working. I see these girls one after another walking into the abortion clinic, and I say, where is the church? Where are you and I? Sure, not everyone can be in front of the abortion clinic, but we can be first responders to our friends and family find themselves in a crisis pregnancy situation, who perhaps have a friend who is in a crisis pregnancy situation. I've shared it before. My hairdresser, sitting at the dentist, talking to these different people, conversations, being in line at Chipotle in the bathroom, and a 13-year-old says she thinks she might be pregnant. Are we listening and aware enough to be those first responders to friends, family, and strangers who are otherwise in the hands of Planned Parenthood? So listen to what Kanye West has to say. Everyone's willing to wear a mask to stop COVID, but what are you and I willing to do in order to stop abortion one at a time here in this nation? My guest today is Father Tim Grumbach. He's a regular guest here on Trending. He serves in the Diocese of Los Angeles at St. Augustine Parish. And it's always a joy to have you, Father Tim. Welcome and happy Veterans Day.
Yeah, thank you. You too. And it's a very special day, especially for my family, that I've got three siblings who are all Army, and they've all seen their share of action and made their sacrifices and their prayers and everything like that. And so it's a joy to be able to share a little bit about that today and just to spend a little bit of time with you all.
Let's talk about the significance of Veterans Day. Like so many of our holidays that we have here in the United States, sometimes we forget the origin of them. Veterans Day originally was marking the anniversary of the end of the First World War. Now, we celebrate all of our veterans on this day. So tell me a little bit about how you see the call to service as a Catholic in that militant response of our veterans, as you've seen by the example of your own siblings.
Well, I think one of the most important things is that today we also celebrate the feast day of St. Martin of Tours, who began his life as a Christian, as a soldier. And from that moment of the great story where he gave away his cloak in the middle of the winter to a beggar who was clad in nothing but rags. And then that night, Jesus comes to him and says, you clothed me. And he restored his cloak. And that became a great relic. And so it was that, soldiers weren't just about taking life and destroying property, but the life of a soldier was also about looking out and caring for those who could not care for themselves. And so to have an example like St. Martin, and to see my siblings, and to see, a lot of people who don't grow up in military families may think that, somebody joins the army just maybe to destroy stuff, to blow stuff up. But that couldn't be farther from the truth for my family, is that they saw a dear need for their country and to protect things that we couldn't protect on our own. And they went and they made great sacrifices, but their families grew out of that experience. And so, though, I'm not one in the army, I can look to my siblings and learn from their experiences and learn from their sacrifices.
Now, sacrifice is a fundamental dimension of what we are called to as Catholics. We talk about the universal call for all the laity, just like Jesus Christ, to be a priest, a prophet, and king. So how do you see that priestly role of sacrifice played out in the lives of military families?
Well, I can just look to my mom, right? That's one of the things I love to do best is when people ask me about my own priesthood, is like, who do I learn how to be a good priest from? Well, my mom and my dad. And the kind of sacrifices that they made in order to let their children go and do, honestly, very dangerous things, but also very noble things, but things that shaped them and shaped their families in ways that they could never have imagined before. So I look at my mom writing letters to my older brother back and forth. This is before email, right? Or before email was really popular. And keeping those letters and seeing the way that my sister read those letters and then wanted to have her own adventures and had very different kinds of adventures than my older brother. And then my little brother just kind of struggling to find his place in life, finding a place in the army where they could use his talents and use his intelligence. I have very smart brothers and a sister, and some of them did well in school and some did not, but they found ways to use their intelligence through the army and the sacrifices that they made in order to be away from their families and in order to be away from their spouses and to be away from us, just to learn those ways of sacrifice. I've learned so much about being a priest and about having a spiritual family by looking at the kinds of sacrifices and the kinds of prayers that my mom and dad have lifted up for the safety of their children.
I think of this as learning to find something to fight for. We were listening to audio from Kanye West just a few minutes ago on the Joe Rogan show. And boy, Kanye just keeps throwing it down, Father Tim, with regard to the abortion issue. And it's a reminder because I don't know about you, but I feel that although we are so pro-life as Catholics, there's so much apathy. Whether people who have become burnt out from being involved in the pro-life work or who say, yeah, I'm pro-life, but they don't really do anything. And we're in a war with regard to whether or not a child's life will be sacrificed on the altar of abortion, or whether a woman will be so damaged by the aftermath of that abortion. And so when you share about Veterans Day and your family and their service, it makes me ask, what are we fighting for ourselves? We may not be called to serve in the military or the army and so forth, but we are called to service in our own life. And Veterans Day is an opportunity to be grateful for those who have served our nation, but should also be a model for us to see, well, what am I doing to serve my nation and the greater good in my community?
Right. I've learned how to serve by watching my brothers and my sister offer their own kinds of service. And it's all in a different way. I can actually say that when I was discerning the priesthood, my little brother and I would, you know, get together. We were both kind of floundering a little bit, we'll be honest, in the community college system. You know, great school, but we just didn't have that motivation. We were trying to figure out, what are we going to do with our life? It's got to be more than this. And we were actually watching that great series, Band of Brothers, which is about I think it's the 82nd Airborne. I know it was Airborne. And so both of my brothers have been at some point in their careers 82nd Airborne. And so they jump out of airplanes for a living.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But so my little brother was super inspired by that, right? It's not just a kid seeing a war movie and be like, oh, war must be great. But he got to see the way that those men would come together in that story and sacrifice for one another and serve one another. And he was extremely inspired by that. Well, I was inspired by the exact same series as we were watching that. I remember watching one episode where there's a chaplain running around on the field in the middle of gunfire and going and being with each and every one of the soldiers that he could get to. And I said, that's what I've got to do with my life. And though I'm not a military chaplain, and that may be somewhere in the future, I'm actually still discerning that. But it had a major impact on my discernment currently in order to become a priest, to see, hey, look, I may not be on a battlefield where there's gunfire. I mean, who knows? I could be here in Los Angeles from time to time. But at the moment, I'm not in that kind of battlefield. But there is a battlefield that I'm on. You know, everybody says, oh, your siblings are all in one army and you're in a different kind of army. I'm like, yeah, that's cute. But you know, there's a reality there. like you said, is that we all have different kinds of battles, especially in the spiritual battlefield, that if we don't take up our spiritual arms, then we're on the devil's battleground, and we're going to face serious casualties if we don't take the spiritual battle very seriously. And so we can look to the kinds of sacrifices and the prayers and the love of a military family and learn a lot from them, even if you're not a military family, to see what kind of sacrifices that every family is called to.
Father Tim, it's making me think of how important it is for us to show rigor in our own lives and self-mortification, because those sacrifices and those battles also occur within our own soul. I mean, that's the battle that you in particular are working with, the sacraments and bringing that into people's lives in the darkness and bringing them out of that. And, you know, I have to bring this up in the face of, you know, receiving the McCarrick report yesterday. It's a reminder that whether it's our priests, whether it's individuals in the Catholic Church, we are called to a greater sense of self-mortification in that rigorous sacrifice that Christ showed us on the cross, so that we can root out the sin in our own lives, so that not just that we don't become that, but so that we can be more to be with God.
Yeah, I was just reading this really powerful article that sent to me by some priest friends that points out that at the root of something like the McCarrick report, the whole issue with Mr. McCarrick, is that they called it a de facto atheism in the church, and not just in the hierarchy, but in the laity as well. And what he means Amen. By that in that article is that, you know, de facto atheism. It doesn't mean that you're proclaiming atheism, but it means you're living it. And it means by the decisions that you make and the way that you administer to your diocese or your parish or to your family, that you're living as if God does not exist and everything relies on you. And you get to make these choices without the morality of a God who has not only loved you into being, not only become like you in all things but sin, not only sacrificed himself on the cross for you, but desires that you be united to him in this life and in the next for eternity. And so to live making decisions without that constantly at the forefront of one's mind is a de facto atheism. And the only way to fight against that is to enter into the spiritual battle, the life of asceticism and penance and prayer and sacrifice. It doesn't mean we need to be gloomy all the time and never eating, but we do need to find the right kinds of ways that we can be emptied out by fasting, by penance, so that God can fill that space and God could be the one making the decisions. And we follow through with them because we've asked God, what do I do now? You know, it takes away that sense of a de facto atheism and lets us actually be Christians.
Okay, I want to talk about this just a little bit more because you're talking about this de facto atheism that is so prevalent in how we are living our lives. As you said, not just our priests, but also us lay persons as well. And so this is where that self-mortification, we hate that word, you know, we think of the hair shirt and we think of the whipping that some of the saints have a history of doing. I think, what was it? Saint Francis of Assisi threw himself into rose bushes and rolled around. You know, we hear this in, I'm not necessarily talking about that type of self-mortification. You know, some people might be called to that. And we have the example of Saint John Vianney, who made too many sacrifices. In fact, the devil mocked him for being a potato eater. And the reason Saint John Vianney was mocked for being a potato eater is he was doing more sacrifice than he was required to. And God can work with that. But we don't like these little things that turn our hearts, minds, bodies, and souls over to God. And I noticed, Father Tim, within the community of those people who have come from the Middle East, I think of the Chaldean Catholic community and the freedom they have found in the United States from that persecution, they are so passionate about their faith, unwaveringly passionate. Yet we become so comfortable in this really kind of practical Catholic atheism, essentially, that we don't have that rigor because we just are too comfortable.
I hate comfortable Catholicism. I wish it would just die. You know, there's so many things in the media right now that it seems like this beige, as Bishop Barron would say, this beige Catholicism or this kind of milquetoast comfortable Catholicism is winning. And you know, but what we really desire in our hearts is a more rigorous Catholicism, which calls us to greater things. Like Archbishop Gomez here in Los Angeles wrote a beautiful pastoral letter just a few years ago called For Greater Things. And it's this reminder that you were born for greater things. That's the kind of Catholicism that we do want to be called forward to, like St. Junipero Serra, right? Always forward, siempre adelante. And you know, St. Martin, even today, is that he had to walk away from his role as a soldier and be under the rule and the role of another superior, another general, which was Christ the King.
That's Father Tim Grumbach here on Trending with Timory. We will be back to discuss why fathers have gifts to give to children and they are indispensable. We'll be right back.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Did you know that a key predictor of success in a person's life, were to predict it now and then follow it into the future, is if a father is present for the upbringing of his child in the home, in an intact family? Fathers teach young boys and girls so much. Yet for some reason, we live in a culture that says, no, dads are dangerous for kids. They're too risky. Fathers are absent by their own choice as well. We also say that dads are unnecessary, clueless. I've worked for years with women in crisis pregnancy and the crisis pregnancy centers, and I've seen all ranges of this, from a desire to have the man present and the father choosing to be absent, to women just not trusting men, and so they push them out of the way. So we're going to discuss the great gifts fathers bring to their children. Father Tim Grumbach is here with me. He is a pastor at St. Augustine Parish in the Diocese of Los Angeles. And speaking of great dads, there's a call from Luis in New Jersey who has a couple comments about raising his own children. Please go ahead and share, Luis.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, I have two daughters. One is 9 years old, actually 10. She already has 10 years old, and the other is 13 years old. One thing that is very, very important is when we talk about abortion, and also with them, we have clear, and we have mentioned many times, the abortion, the origin of abortion is nothing else than sexual relationships, that they are premarital sexual relationships. And as a Catholic, of course, we see the Holy Family and we pray our daily rosary in family. And then we pray for those who are under the pressure of this media, this world that shows the sex as the highest pleasure, but really it becomes a vice. It's like a sex addiction. That's everything is focus or pointing to that in the business and everything. And we talk about that with our daughters, and they see the commercials. They see, for example, and we got samples when we are driving in the highway, and we see the billboards. We go to New York. We are pretty close to Manhattan, and we go here in other billboards and highways. And they say, "Look at daddy. What is that woman? What has to do with the TV that they are showing? There's nothing. You see, that's the proof." And they see that. So this is how important we keep that conversation, but not in the corrective way that don't do that because you will be like that. No,
to know the difference,
but in a way that they become familiar with you. They go around and they become familiar with that. And even we talk about how in the schools, unfortunately, they was taking out things about Christianism or Catholics that we are. Now they cannot talk about the rights of that. And they cannot talk about life and not supporting abortion. And yes, and Black Lives Matter. And with that comment that you play at the beginning of the program, with that Louise. Comment that there are 1,000 children dying.
Yes, 1,000 black babies aborted every day. And Louise, thank you so much for your comments, because you are raising your daughters to know what matters most with regard to sexuality, to be able to point it out, see it in the media, on a billboard, in a movie, or in a TV show. And this is one of those moments where we have to name it and claim it in our culture. We talk about naming and claiming sins. We need to name and claim impurity that is around us, the confusion about sexual identity, because if we don't, we will just continue to have that billboard message in front of us, telling us a different narrative. And so as a father, thank you so much for being that advocate for your children. We're talking about dads and how important they are, that they are a key predictor of success in life. Father Tim, you're joining me. I want to go through a little bit. We've been watching some content from two very influential individuals looking at the psychology and psychosis of young children, their upbringings, Jordan Peterson and Dr. Warren Farrell, who Dr. Warren Farrell, you know, if you don't know him, he is the author of the book, The Boy Crisis, and they talk about the gift fathers have for their children. What were your initial reactions to this video?
Oh, I loved it, actually, because they were talking about the way that especially young men can be disappearing into the world of video games because of sometimes, not always, but sometimes an absence of that father figure and losing a certain amount of control over the world and relationships, and then entering into this virtual world where you can control these things and you can control the violence that is done when interiorly, especially a struggle for men, I can say, is that when there's a certain violence being done to us and we have no control over it, and if it's something that's happening interiorly, we want to exteriorize it and have some control over it, and how some men will escape into these video game worlds to do this. Now, I know that I know some people personally who actually can use online video gaming for evangelization, and it's really beautiful the way that they do that. But I've also seen personally, and you know, in my own life growing up, how easy it is to run to that distraction and to avoid the kind of great and sacrificial love that God our Father is calling us to. And that my own dad, you know, being a great image, I can say, of the Father to me, that he was calling me to. So it's a way to run away from what fathers are supposed to be calling their children to.
It's interesting in some of the studies we've seen that not only is a father's present in the upbringing in the home for the children a key predictor of success, but one of the other things it talked about is how it teaches empathy to both boys and girls, and it also teaches boys and girls to learn to be assertive rather than aggressive.
Right, and for them to be able to look at the culture around them and to interact with it appropriately, to be angry at what should be would make us angry, and to love mm-hmm. the people that that need to be loved. You know, I look even to the example of the Holy Family, as Luis so greatly brought that idea to us. Is look to the Holy Family. That's the model of our own families. To look at Saint Joseph, who would have taught Jesus in his humanity how to say the prayers of Judaism, how to I like to imagine that Saint Joseph showed Jesus how to wash feet, how to pick women up off the ground who had been abused by others. And so that, you know, we don't hear anything.
I thought you were
going
to say pick women up.
Oh, no.
Wait,
no.
Where are we going here,
oh,
Father Tim?
Oh, yeah, this is a different kind of gospel. No. But to lift up the people who were cast down by society, I like to think that we don't hear St. Joseph speak in the gospels, but when we hear Jesus speak, we get to hear a certain sense Joseph's words and see Joseph's actions, and to see that, you know, it wasn't his son by blood, but that made him no less his son in that culture and in ours. And so I've got a dear friend who has been just really, really an awesome example right now of fatherhood, especially here in Los Angeles, like specifically here in Los Angeles, with a lot of people saying, we need to get out of LA, we need to get out of Southern California. And he's mm-hmm. like, no, I want my kids here. I want them to see the mess that this place is, and that they have a role in evangelizing Los Angeles, in loving the people who can't care for themselves, of seeing the mess and knowing that they have a role to play in the midst of that. And mm-hmm. that's an amazing thing for a father to do. And could you imagine his kids not having an example like that and saying, you know, it's time to run away when things get messy. But to have a father who says, no, we're staying. It's not going to be easy, but we're going to stay, and I'm going to be here to provide and to protect you. And I just love that example of yeah. fatherhood. And I learned so much as a spiritual father by watching the dads that I do ministry with. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that a little bit, but I do have to say before we go there, I fully respect and appreciate where people are at with regard to needing to leave particular communities, California. I mean, the school system, the cost of living, the taxes, I mean, are next to impossible for parents to actually be mm-hmm. present to their kids. So if you have the capability to have a balanced home life and bring your children up and stay in California, and as some might say, fight, that's great. But I think what's important about this father that you're speaking of, who's choosing to stay in California and expose his kids to the culture, is he's teaching them temperance. He's teaching them risk-taking. He's teaching them to go out into the missionary field. And that's very important, whether you're in a risky area or a less risky area. And this is something that's so important that fathers can teach. They teach children, you know, things such as delayed gratification. They teach kids how to control themselves. This is something, you know, there are studies done on rats and there are studies done on humans, and that a father taking those risks of playing with a kid in terms of, you know, tossing them about, throwing them up in the air, not catching them and letting them land on the bed. The kid learns unconditional love. The child learns that there's a certain level of risk, but I'm safe in the arms of my father. Those kids are learning that from their parents. But when the dad's not there, and we're seeing, for example, that lifespan can actually be predicted specifically for boys to be up to 40% shorter because their father isn't present.
Wow. Yeah, the father showing the son how to live, right? And you're right. It depends on every family's situation about whether or not they can stay or whether or not they need to move. My friend, you know, he is a man of great prayer, and he has heard God say over and over again, no, you need to stay here. But certainly people have heard, you know, God say, okay, it's time to move on. It's time to go and evangelize somewhere else, to raise your family somewhere else. And so it's always about listening to God first. And so that's another thing that's so important for fathers in the house, is to be men of prayer. And, you know, always looking at St. Joseph, who was obviously a man of deep prayer, who could discern in his dreams what was, you know, something that was just his imagination or something that was actually God speaking to him. but also recognizing that St. Joseph was not the most holy man in the Holy Family. he was not the holiest person in the Holy Family, I should say. And that God still gave him a certain headship and leadership in the Holy Family. So that fathers don't need to be afraid to be leaders in their family, but they have to be men of prayer. You cannot be a father and not be a man of prayer, because then you'll just be making all the decisions by yourself. And that's one of the most frightening things I know for fathers to do.
And another area to touch on, the importance of fathers in the home, you know, maybe you are in a situation where the father isn't able to be present to your child, or maybe the father is in a job that is so rigorous he can't be there. We were talking about Veterans Day and military families. They're not always able to be there full time. And so this is where we talk about the importance of finding a community, whether it's your family or a person in the church who can be that male influence for your children with the rough and tumble play, with the affirmation, teaching empathy, and truly, you know, getting their hands dirty and being present to your kids.
Yeah, and that is one of the sacrifices specifically that I've been talking about today. To give it a specific example is to see the heartbreak of my brothers who can't be there with their children who are growing up while they're deployed. I remember when my older brother was deployed to Afghanistan, and seeing, you know, a picture on my phone of my niece, you know, kind of his daughter, looking at his face on a computer screen. And this is just like at the beginning of Skype and, you know, video calling, and how it wrenched my heart to see that, you know, she was growing up and my brother couldn't be there at the moment, but how amazing technology could be that they could still find a way to be present. And so while there are some heartbreaking cases, so many more and more where fathers choose not to be present, I've seen in my brothers this great desire to be present as best they can. You know, my little brother's in Korea right now, and his one-year-old daughter and his wife they're very adventurous. And so they've just made a drive across the country, and they'll be coming down here for Thanksgiving. And I can't wait to see them. But it's just amazing to see that when he is at home and the way that he can be a dad, he's such an awesome dad. And I'm so proud of my brother that he's willing to make these sacrifices for his family, for his country. But he still knows that his primary vocation is to be there for his wife and his daughter.
And wives and mothers, we have a responsibility in terms of how we, whether or not that dad's able to be present all the time or not, to remind the children that the dad loves them. They can't wait to be with them. I was reading a Theology of Home book the other day. Dr. Carrie Grass was with us on Monday talking about being present in the family versus at home. Where are we happier and why is that? And in the book, though, one of the stories she talks about is, I'm not sure if it was her or her co-author, Nicole Mehring, but there was a story in there about how there is a time where the father had a really intense work schedule and couldn't be as present. And he mourned his lack of presence with the kids, and the kids missed him. And so one thing that they did, I think she was saying, was they would sing songs and record the songs about how much they loved being with dad and they missed him. And she would tell the kids about how important the dad was and what he was doing for them. And what happened is she would then send these recordings, or they'd play the recordings for the dad, and it helped to affirm him and where he was at in terms of his lack of ability to be as present, but also it helped the kids to appreciate, respect, and honor and love their dad. And that's something I think us as women need to learn as well, when we live in a culture that is so anti-man in the home and treats him like the buffoon.
Right. And you see it all over TV and all over movies. You know, how often you get to see a story about a good dad who's as present as he can possibly be, maybe not perfect, but it's over and over again. It's these buffoons and these morons. And so that's the kind of example that men are expecting to live up to in the family, rather than to be people who make sacrifices, can provide and protect their families, even though it's not easy. They won't be perfect all the time, but we need to see that. We need to see more examples of dads who are as present as they possibly can be and are making sacrifices to do so.
Amen. That's Father Tim Grumbach here on Trending with Timmer. You can follow him on social media. We will tag him. And be sure to share this podcast episode. You can find it at relevantradio.com/trending. Go ahead and head there now to subscribe and connect on social media. I'll be right back to share what we've learned from the quarantine about the importance of relationships and good sleep.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It is fascinating to me to see what this social experiment of COVID has done to people. We hear a lot about the negative consequences of COVID, but if you remember, there was an incredible thing happening during the more intense parts of COVID. We were looking around our neighborhoods, noticing families walking to the park to play basketball, families going on bike rides together, chatter in the community. Have we already forgotten that in the last couple of months? Have we found new ways to adapt to keep ourselves busy and distracted so that we don't have to sit around a table and stare at each other? I don't know. With a lot of young people attending school online and still present in the home, some interesting facts have come out about how well teens are faring still in the face of COVID. And here's the reality. I'm reading this article and it has to do with fielding questions, teens in quarantine survey, and the same questions were asked in 2018 as they were today in 2020. Questions had to do with mental health, family time, sleep, technology use, happiness, depression, and so forth. Well, guess what? The results were actually better during the quarantine than they were back in 2018 when things were, quote, normal. Well, maybe normal, the status quo wasn't really producing the fruits that it should. So here are the two things that have changed for teenagers, and this relates to all of us. I don't think just teenagers. Teenagers are sleeping more than they did before. They're actually getting rest. This has been a problem for teenagers. Think how early so many kids go to school. Think about all the extracurricular activities they have, and then they still have homework when they get home. They're up so late, and even then, we think about the college atmosphere. Okay, go past the teenagers, head into college. Same thing. Your workload in terms of homework is unbelievable. I mean, absolutely unbelievable in terms of some classes, depending on what you're studying. But I remember, you know, when I was in college and grad school, I was reading probably 8 hours a day or more in addition to my college courses. And then in addition to having to write papers and research, and then to try and maybe have a part-time job on the side at the same time and somehow keep up a social network, a social life, that's really, really difficult. And so even young adults find themselves not sleeping enough. And all of a sudden during COVID, guess what? They're sleeping more as well. Same thing with adults. We could say the same in terms of having more time to engage socially with our families. We had our priest over the other night and he was talking about one of the great things with the quarantine with COVID is that he's had more time to spend with parishioners. The pace of life has changed, and that's a good thing. To have those interpersonal interactions and communication, guess what it points to? The body and the soul cannot be separated. We need rest on a simple biological, physiological dimension, but we also need at the same time for that rest to fuel the spirit, to inspire the spirit. Rest is, I really do believe this, an element of trusting in God that I am not in control. I am not going to do everything. I am not capable of it. And what's sad is that so often people anymore go to bed when they have just hit an absolute wall. And they roll out and they're scrambling, trying to get out of bed in the morning. We're living not just in this physiological breakdown of the human person, but it's a spiritual breakdown as well because we're not relying on God. Do your best during the day, but allow yourself to rest and know that God is going to do the rest of it. He is. And we're not called to perfection in terms of how we accomplish a task and so forth. And this is something that young people are showing signs of, guess what? Their depression numbers have gone down during COVID, and their loneliness statistics have also shown a decline in loneliness. Why? Because they're actually getting rest. And then they're actually having the opportunity to spend time with family, which is telling. Because consider this. There's been all this concern about social isolation because of the physical distancing that we're going through. I'm not a fan of calling it social distancing. So all this social isolation reality has forced families to be together. And kids like it. Even the teenagers, they may act like they're jaded and not like it. But it's been good for them. Just because you don't like something doesn't mean it's not good for you. There are days where I don't like getting out of bed in the morning. I don't like exercising. I don't like eating a lot of foods right now. But it's still good for me. And so this is yet again where we point to, what do kids need? What do teenagers need? They need to be nourished body and soul. They need physical rest. They cannot continue to function at the high-paced environment that we have continued to allow to go on. And so no matter what happens, how much longer we have restrictions with regard to COVID, and how frustrated we are about everything that's gone on with this, we can say, you know what, thank you. This is a wake-up call. A wake-up call for rest, and a wake-up call for good social interaction. And if we don't have that, we are going to see yet again that increase in depression, that increase in loneliness. There is no reason for our teenagers to be lonely and overly exhausted. That is a burden that parents and adults have a responsibility to help ease, both by the schedule that's set, but also about how we live our own lives in terms of balance. So often we hear all of these tips for, you know, get a great night's rest, be more productive. But if we aren't appealing to the social and very human dimension of rest and social engagement, we're going to have a difficult time finding that balance that will preserve us from depression and preserve us from loneliness. This is our opportunity to take back the type of life we are going to live and restore the culture. We don't like the culture of apathy, culture of death, culture of complacency. You don't like the results of the election. You don't like seeing all the different things that are happening. We'll go back to the basics. How will we overcome our own anger? How will we overcome our own resentment, our lack of presence to others? How will we overcome all of these little things and bad habits that pop up day in and day out if we aren't taking that moment to pause and see ourselves before others in conversations? Or to pause and get the basic rest that we need? A friend of mine, a couple years ago, we were both traveling here, there, and everywhere in the summer, speaking at various events. And he was saying, yeah, I had this day where I was just exhausted. And I went up to my priest at one of the events before I went to speak. And I said, Father, I've had this massive headache. And is there like some sort of blessing or something you can give me just to help me get past it so I can just continue to do the work I'm doing? And the pastor looked at him, the priest looked at him and said, I can bless you, sure, I'm glad to, but have you taken the Tylenol? Have you gotten enough sleep? Have you been eating? Remember HALT? What did that stand for? You know, we have those different things. Being hungry, being angry, I think. You go tired. I'm going to miss it. My producer's mouthing it to me. I can see her right now. I don't know sign language. We're going to have to practice the sign language behind the scenes. Karen's great. She's here behind the scenes. And we're always keeping me like, okay, where are we at? What are we talking about? But really, what's going on? And so I remember that story because, okay, I didn't sleep enough last night and I'm angry and I'm not getting anything done and I'm overwhelmed. Well, it's because we aren't appealing to the fact that God created us and he told us to rest. In fact, he dedicated a whole day to rest. But what is rest? I love Joseph P. Perry's book on leisure. Oh, it's an incredible book. He's an incredible author. If you ever have the opportunity to pick up something of his, and he's a great philosopher. And he talks about how we don't know how to have leisure time in today's culture. You know, we think leisure is, oh, I deserve another episode of whatever show that is, three shows later. Or, oh, I just really want to just go out and eat something because that'll make me feel good. And, you know, we have all these things. I really deserve to be able to spend 3 hours on Twitter today. I don't know, whatever it is for you. I'm just throwing some common ones out there. But rest actually has to do with God. It has to do with being renewed in Him, but also renewed in the culture that He's created. So that could mean watching a movie. That could mean going and having a delicious meal. But the problem is that we're chasing after desires when it comes to leisure time, rather than cultivating in prayer, cultivating our souls, cultivating taking the time to slow down, to look at something in a way that edifies the soul, rather than a way that just continues to be a part of this mundane attitude and sacrificial offering of progress. And so this is what the findings from teenagers, I think, really have pointed to during COVID. Rest and relationships matter, but that means that we need to take the time back to slow the pace in order to make that happen. Tomorrow I'll be back with matchmaker Christina Pineda. During our marriage hour, we're going to talk about generational wounds and how that can impact the dating and marriage game. We'll be right back tomorrow on Trending.